Our guest today, Lori McKenna's professional life may be a singer-songwriter fairy tale, but it's because her life as a mother of five in New England is so grounded that her songs have such power. Since Lori joined us on the cafe the first time as just another struggling singer-songwriter, some amazing things have happened, all sparked by her music getting to the ears of country superstar Faith Hill and her husband Tim McGraw, who produced Lori's new album called Unglamorous. But let's not get ahead of ourselves. Let Lori McKenna tell the story.
Well, yeah, I put out Bittertown in May of 2004 on Signature Sounds, and my old friend and at one time label mate, Mary Gaucher, called me a couple months later, and she was living down in Nashville, and she was working with a publisher, Melanie Howard, and Mary called me and said, you know, I gave your record to my publisher, and she wants to talk to you about a publishing deal. So I was very happy about that, and Melanie called me, and she said, I'd like to, you know, pitch your songs around town and see what people think about them. And I think that there's maybe some commercial stuff in there, and which I was actually surprised to hear. And literally, you know, just a few weeks later, she called me back and said that Faith Hill wanted to hear everything I've ever written. And then I started thinking Melanie might be crazy. But by Thanksgiving of that year, Faith had recorded five of my songs, and three of them made it on the record. And by December, I had my publishing deal. And then the following August, Faith's record came out. And somewhere, I don't exactly remember where, but somewhere in the middle there, you know, Warner Brothers called and said they wanted to talk to me about a record deal. And so it was a bunch of crazy things happening at my house for a while.
So did you get a chance to talk? Obviously you have, because you've been out on tour with Faith and Tim McGraw. Did you get a chance to talk with her about what attracted her to the songs?
Yeah, it's funny because I met her about a month before her record came out. So I met her in the summer of 2005, and then we did the Oprah show together, which was that fall. And I still didn't really understand. I would just sort of look at her, and I didn't exactly understand, to be honest, why she got me so well. And it sort of just intrigued me a little bit. And then I would get questions from people like, why do you think Faith understands your song so well? And I hadn't figured it out yet. And over the last couple of years, just, you know, being with her enough, and, you know, every time I've played in Nashville, Byron Gallimore and Tim have come to the shows, and Missy Gallimore and Faith Hill, they'll just come to these little bars that, you know, wherever I'm at, they will come. And then we toured with them for about 5 weeks, and now it makes perfect sense to me, because we're very similar in the way that most moms are similar, and just that, you know, the priorities are, you know, are the family, and that might not always be a perfect situation, but you make it work anyway. And now I totally get it. And it's basically, you know, it's just that very, I guess that domestic thing, that maternal thing. And Faith is just very much like most of the moms I know, you know, and Tim is very much like most of the dads I know. And they are such grounded people, and their kids, you would never know that they are, you know, that they're Faith Hill and Tim McGraw's kids. They're just regular kids, and that's a priority for them. And they keep things really family oriented. And that's exactly how, you know, how my family is. So I think, and I get it now, you know, looking back, I remember being a little surprised at it myself.
Have you made any different decisions about your career because of your family?
Well, I think I didn't have a career until I had a family, so I had them first. So the choices are easy to make in that regard. But I think that, you know, when we were talking to Warner Brothers about, you know, putting out this record and making you know, some records for Warner Brothers, I knew that touring would be an issue, and I, you know, I do have five kids, and basically, you know, they asked me, well, what do you need? And I said, I need to take my kids with me, and they said, consider it done. And, you know, so that's always been the thing, like when I, you know, picking management and all that stuff, it's like everyone, you know, and agents, it's like, okay, so you know I got five kids, right? Like, how are we gonna, and that's just all like just so I don't go crazy, because I really, you know, I can't be away from them too long, or I do get a little crazy. So
Lori McKenna is our guest today on the cafe. And what do you want to start with?
I Know You.
Mm-hmm.
never woke up beside a stranger, but you never spent the night alone. And your jacket is a flask of southern comfort, in your pocket you got a comb. I know you. Pushed right to the limit, lived on a lonesome road. He chopped up an old pine dresser to heat the house once in the cold. Baby, I know you. I know you. And I know where you go when you want to be alone. I know just how hard you work, how much money you bring home. You love the sound of church bells, but you hate sitting in the pew. Baby, I know you. Well, D.H. Lawrence would be your favorite poet if you thought poetry was cool. You have too much pride to be a thief and just enough gut to be a fool. Honey, I know you. The smell of your rain. I know every time you walk out that door, you might stumble back in it again. I know you. Well, yes, I do, baby blue. I know you. I know that you feel bad for every bad thing that you do. You got a scar on your right cheek and the fear of God embedded in you. Had a wooden spoon and a shamrock tattoo. Baby, I know you. Well, no, the woman's gonna feel beneath the skin that you are in. No, the woman's gonna read to be sorry for your sins. I know you. I know you. I know what you look like just before you cry. I know how to make you sick, and I know how to make you die.
Lori McKenna is playing live for us today, and who knows whether she made a Boston record or a Nashville record. That's a song that that fits anywhere. You know, we talked about this when you first came in about coming up in kind of Boston songwriter circles. You talked about Mary Gaucher, and there's so many great people who were playing in that area when you were starting out. But you were different because you were the mom with the kids who was doing it. You weren't the, you know, person out of college, you know, first couple of years. How did that set you apart?
Well, it's so funny because we've actually, you know, I've been playing with Mark Arelli, who's one of the first people that I met when I started. And I was, you know, I didn't start doing open mics until I was 27. And when I got to the open mics, you know, usually people like Mary would be the feature of the open mic. And Mary and I always talk about it because, like, we stuck up because we were like the older ladies, you know, and everyone else was like, you know, in college or out of college. But, you know, I think personally what I thought made me different from everybody else was that I had, you know, a husband and all these kids to go home to. And at the end of the day, if music wasn't going to be my thing, I still had, you know, I still had this family base that made me a happy person. And this was just going to be sort of like, you know, the icing on the cake for me, where a lot of people, I think, when they start out and they know younger than I did that music is their thing and, you know, that's what they're going to pursue in their career. And if it doesn't work out the way you need it to or expect it to, it can be a lot harder of a fall, you know. And I think that sometimes you can see that in people. When I look back, of course, I didn't really think of this at the time, but when I look back, it's like I've been so blessed. But maybe it was just because, you know, I sort of, you know, in some ways had a completely different take on it than other people.
Something you're not mentioning, which is something I get from it, is you, because of your life and where you were at in it, you had a different view of people and relationships, I think, than a lot of people do when they're single and just, you know, coming out of college and are very me-centered.
Right.
And that certainly comes across in these songs.
Well, I think that it's one of those things where I had my son Brian when I was 20, you know, and it's one of those things where the idea of, and I always tell this to people when they're having their first babies, you know, you just cannot imagine what your heart is capable of until you have a child. And maybe that's a mean thing to say for people that don't have children, but that was my experience with it. Like, I knew I loved my husband, I knew I loved my family, and then I saw this baby, I was like, ooh, this is different. And then you have another one, it's, you know, and it's just, it just gets bigger and bigger. And I think that probably, you know, the writing, even if it sounds like it's a love song between a man and a woman, I might have been thinking about one of my kids, you know, at the time.
Well, when you're thinking about men on this album, they don't always fare well. And perhaps we should do one of those songs. You mentioned wanting to do Your Next Lover.
I think that it's funny. I get asked about this. It's not a cheating song. It's over, and I feel like she wants him to find his happiness. That's how I think of the characters in this song.
From your eyes, so baby, I think I know just
Nori McKenna's playing live for us today, and Your Next Lover is another one from Unglamorous, her debut album out on Warner Nashville. The other thing that strikes me on this album is you've played one of the happy songs, but there's you know, songs about a woman facing an alcoholic husband. There's people locked in I'm thinking of How to Survive in kind of a loveless relationship, and there's a woman who's on the curb ready to go. And you're in such a happy relationship, or at least that's how you present it.
It's one of those things I always tell people, like, I just get it all out in the songs, so I'm very well adjusted in real life.
Do you set yourself? I'm gonna get into this character. How do you get into the characters in these?
Usually, I think that there's always a piece of myself, obviously, in the beginning of the song. But sometimes at the end of the day, you can end up completely in a different place than you started, and you don't really necessarily know how you got there. And sometimes songs, I don't even know where they came from until a couple months later or even longer. It's strange. But, like Your Next Lover, which is about this, woman that wants her old boyfriend to just go off and be happy. It literally came from a conversation that I had with my husband, and he was teasing me about something. And I think we were out somewhere, and I said, well, she's not even your type. Like, I know exactly what your type looks like. And then I realized, when people are together long enough, you do know those things about each other, and you sort of can think, where that person would end up if not with you. And Written Permission, which is, the breakup song, and I wrote that one years ago, and that one came from my kids brought a school paper home from school that said, your son/daughter requires your written permission for such and such, and I thought the two words looked good together. So you just never know, where it's going to come from. But I am a happy person, I promise.
We can tell. Lori McKenna is our guest today, and what do you want to do next?
Well, I thought that I would do Stealing Kisses, which is on Bitter Town, and this is one of those songs that I wrote in my kitchen one day, but it was really just, the way I have felt in the middle of the night, up alone with the kids or a baby or something, and just talking to my other friends who are moms and sort of been in that same situation where you can live in a house, and I live in a house with seven of us all together, and sometimes it can still feel, you can still have that feeling of being completely alone in the world. It's a strange feeling, and I think that a lot of parents feel it, and it sometimes, you know, you feel guilty about feeling it. I think that's where the song started.
Says as he takes your beer for his own. You remember wondering what his wife thought about his occupation. He knows that you were just chasing a dream to the town line and then back and over again. So he winks at you, girl, tells you all to see you later. I was stealing a kiss from a boy. Now I'm begging affection from a man in my house dress. Don't you know who I am? Don't you know who I am? I'm standing in your kitchen. It's late enough, your husband's dinner is cold, so we'll wrap it up and leave it for him on the stove. It's probably the traffic again, another to one adult all day, except your neighbor drives you crazy. And when he finally gets in, well, he's sure not in the mood for talking.
Laurie McKenna and Stealing Kisses goes back to Bittertown. She's our guest today on the cafe. Okay, this is where I get to be a voyeur, hopefully. I didn't see the Oprah show. But
you
didn't? No, the Oprah show, you and Faith Hill were on. But tell me what it was like.
for a long time, I was one of the moms that, you know, cooked dinner at 5 o'clock and watched Oprah while she was cooking dinner, and so it was great. I think that Oprah has done so much for just, you know, people in this country, but especially women. And so it was really great to be there and be part of that. And at the same time, it was like only the second time I had ever met Faith, and I was still sort of in awe of her, you know, performance of my words. You know, when I heard, you know, just the way she sings Stealing Kisses, it's like she knows exactly what I'm talking about. And it surprised a lot of people, I think, because you think, well, she's just this beautiful woman. How could she ever, you know, beg affection from a man? But it's just the idea of the song and how it made me think, well, wow, I must have done something right for this to all make sense to her. The best part of the show didn't actually air on the show. It was one of those after-show things. And I was, at that point, sitting in the front row of the audience, because they sort of move you around. When you're not on the couch, they'll put you in the audience. And Oprah was sitting beside me, and Faith was up singing a gospel song, which I believe is called I Surrender All. And Oprah was sobbing, and she's holding my hands, and she's singing. I had never heard the song other than Faith singing it the night before at rehearsal, and we all just sobbed. It was like, it's like going to church listening to her sing the song. And it was like such a spiritual experience, and I have Oprah holding my hands, and I'm like looking around at the audience like, what's this happening? Like, how did I get here? It's like one of those very surreal moments, you know?
Lori McKenna with yet another amazing tale to tell. That new album is called Unglamorous, and thanks to Lori for being our guest. We'll be back in a moment here on The World Cafe.